Good evening. In the news tonight, as temperatures dip, Governor Andrew Cuomo orders homeless off the street throughout the state. Mayor de Blasio argues that we're already doing this in New York City. President Obama is set to tighten the nation's gun control restrictions without going through Congress. New York and New Jersey Muslims denounce Saudi Arabia and the beheading of their beloved Sheikh al-Nisra. With these and other stories from New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, January 4th, 2016. New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo says he's ordering cities statewide to take homeless people from the streets to shelters when temperatures freeze.
It doesn't matter if you live in Buffalo or Albany or New York City, we believe nobody should be left to sleep on the streets.
Sunday, Cuomo said he signed an executive order to protect the homeless. It takes effect tomorrow. The order came as temperature in parts of New York State dipped to below 32 degrees. It calls for police departments and social service agencies to move people into shelters, including those reluctant to go. The governor says the order is necessary to protect people from hypothermia and potential death. He says New York State will provide financial help to make sure local governments are following the mandate.
Executive order put out by the governor that I don't see it changes anything that we actually do.
NYPD Commissioner Bill Bratton.
The governor basically issued an order that was statewide that I'm not familiar with what other cities do. He also controls the police forces, the MTA, Port Authority, Port Authority, Penn Station, Grand Central Terminal. They all recently, LaGuardia Airport had homeless issues. So there are many state facilities where there are these issues that his mandate would be pertinent also.
We appreciate the intent for sure, but it doesn't, I agree with Commissioner Bratton, it doesn't change what we do and what we have done for many years.
Mayor de Blasio says New York City is already doing three things to address the homeless population, starting with Homestat, homeless outreach and mobile engagement street action teams.
So that Homestat initiative will every day be working to get people off the streets. Obviously, will be very usable when there are particularly difficult in, you know, moments like climate problems and weather problems. And we'll have people out constantly engaging the homeless to bring them in. So that's one. Code Blue, which we greatly intensified when I came into office. It previously did not apply to families. So families could not come into shelter automatically. Now, doesn't matter if you're an individual or a family, you can come into any of our shelters, no questions asked, when we have a weather emergency. You don't have to go through the normal intake. That's something I did one of the first days in office as mayor. And then the initiative that we talked about, NYC Safe, where we're tracking people with mental health problems and a history of violence, and we're ensuring that there's very specific follow-up in each case, whether it might be law enforcement follow-up or mental health services that we make sure they get. These are all substantial policy changes that are going to have a real impact on the ground.
Tracking homeless people has drawn criticism from advocates who say it criminalizes the population. In other New York State news, Governor Cuomo says he wants to raise the minimum wage for nearly 30,000 state university workers to $15 an hour. His plan would affect about 28,000 employees of the State University of New York. The state's base minimum wage rose from $8.75 to $9 an hour on Thursday. Cuomo wants to gradually raise the hourly wage to $15 an hour for all workers by 2021. It would be the highest state wage in the nation. The topic of President Barack Obama's weekly address was the epidemic of gun violence. He says all across America, survivors of gun violence are forced to make awful anniversaries every day, but Congress hasn't done anything to stop the scourge of gun violence.
3 years ago, a bipartisan common sense bill would have required background checks for virtually everyone who buys a gun. Keep in mind, this is a policy that is supported by some 90% of the American people. It was supported by a majority of NRA households. But the gun lobby mobilized against it, and the Senate blocked it.
The president is asking Americans to take action against the gun lobby.
So I know there are a bunch of us who care about this. If you are one of them, I need your help. Change, as always, is going to take all of us. The gun lobby is loud and well organized in its defense of effortlessly available guns for anyone. The rest of us are going to have to be just as passionate and well organized in our defense of our kids.
Obama says that's the work of citizenship, to stand up and fight for the change that we seek. Today, he met with Attorney General Loretta Lynch to discuss what actions he can take to reduce gun violence. He's expected to use executive action to expand background checks on gun sales by forcing more sellers to register as federally licensed gun dealers, an approach Republicans strongly oppose. The changes would be aimed at some unregistered sellers who skirt the background check laws by selling at gun shows, online, or at informal settings. Thursday night, Obama plans to participate in a town hall at George Mason University in Virginia on reducing gun violence. The president will take questions from the audience at the event, moderated by CNN's Anderson Cooper. In other news, Central American families are the targets of stepped-up immigration raids and deportations. This has immigrant rights advocates worried. Andrea Sears reports.
The Department of Homeland Security is reportedly preparing raids targeting hundreds of families who arrived during a surge of border crossings starting in early 2014. Fleeing violence in Central America, many filed asylum claims that have been denied. But Susanna Saul, an attorney with Her Justice, a nonprofit serving low-income women, says most had no access to legal advice during the asylum process.
Many of them either did not put forward any kind of case or put forward a case that was not legally sufficient because they didn't know how to make the case themselves, and they were ordered deported.
Pressure to begin deportations increased after a court ordered DHS to release families held in detention centers. Saul represents a woman who fled violence in Honduras only to become the victim of a crime in the United States. Her asylum application had been denied, but as a crime victim who cooperated with law enforcement, she's entitled to a special visa known as U non-immigrant status.
And the U non-immigrant status petition process takes over a year, so the idea that she could be the subject of a raid would obviously interfere with her ability to pursue that relief.
U visas are available to victims of domestic violence, human trafficking, and other crimes. Immigration law has been compared to tax law for its levels of complexity, and there are a number of legitimate grounds for applying for U.S. residency. But as Saul points out, most of those facing deportation actions have few options open to them.
Many, many people don't know what they're eligible for, and there's a critical shortage of lawyers who are out there and able to take cases for low-income people.
Immigrants advocates say the first raids took place on Saturday, resulting in the detention of at least 11 Central American immigrant families in Texas and Georgia. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Sectarian violence between Shia and Sunni Muslims has erupted as Saudi Arabia and Iran vie to be the top power in the Mideast. In Tehran, protesters stormed the Saudi embassy in response to a beheading Saturday in Saudi Arabia of a Shia leader, Sheikh Nimra, along with 46 others, many shot to death by a firing squad. Among them, dissidents condemning Saudi policies and treatment of their Shia minority. Sheikh Nimra al-Nimra was a central figure in Arab Spring-inspired protests by Saudi Arabia's Shiite minority until his arrest in 2012. He was convicted of terrorism charges but denied advocating violence. Demonstrations took place from the streets of Bahrain to Pakistan in protest. This may seem far away, but not for New York Muslims. They came out in large number at Columbus Circle on Sunday to protest the beheading of al-Nimra and to protest the Saudi king and the Saudi regime. Protesters like Dunya Haddad, studying to be a doctor here in New York.
We're here to show ourselves that we're all Muslims, and we're also, you know, victims of all these terrorists and al-Saud, the Saudi Arabian regime, which are responsible for all the terrorist, like, attacks, and they're part of it, and they're killing their own, like, Muslim people, and anyone that speaks out, and they kill them, you know, and we're here for freedom of speech, and we're here to say that all these nations that speak for freedom of speech and for democracy, and here they are supporting a nation that kills in the name of someone who speaks against them.
The killing of their leader is a spark of revolution about to take place, says Kamal, a City College student.
when you see that there's injustice being done, that's when you take the stand. We compare this to Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks stood out against oppression and against injustice, inequality. And now if America can consider her a hero, Sheikh Nimr should be the same hero that she was. And U.S. should not back, you know, this kind of mentality that minorities don't count. At that time, the African Americans were a minority. At this time, the Shia are a minority, and they are being persecuted because of that.
So
that's, I mean, it's very sad.
Three older Muslim women from Queens, Long Island, and New Jersey, Navida, Nusef, Ridos, say the Saudis are protecting ISIS.
They are providing ISIS, and they are doing what ISIS can't do in their own country, in Saudi. They are killing innocent people without any reason. They don't give any.
Sorry to interrupt. Beheading them in the squares. Just yesterday, 47 people, they were beheaded. Nobody took notice. Who? There was no news about it. 47 people,
beheaded.
And one of them was the priest, Al Nimr, a very pious man, activist, speaker, 59 years, 57 years old. So we had changed everything for every other occasion. Nobody took notice. Why?
That's why
we are here. People should know what's happening in the world. This world, people, humanity is being crushed.
And Sheikh Nimr was a peaceful protester. He has no arms. He was just saying that we should get like all the people for Saudi Arabia. He was not talking about anyone. All Saudi citizens should get the rights that they should have. So if he's talking against...
That's all he was saying, that people should have a say in the government and we should get the right why Saudi is doing that. Saudi is protecting ISIS and they were saying don't protect them, don't supply them, don't give them money. That's all. And they are beheading anybody who's voicing that opinion.
Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia responded to protests and attacks on diplomatic facilities in Iran by severing diplomatic ties. The response by the U.S. so far has been tepid. It has failed to condemn the Saudi government or distance itself from the regime. Activists, including members of Code Pink, plan to protest the mass executions in Saudi Arabia at the Saudi embassy in Washington tomorrow. The news was produced tonight with help from Andrea Sears and the New York News Connection and Reggie Johnson at WBAI's Atlantic Avenue studio. I'm Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.